Chapter 50. Madam Metternich, well, the case, Napoleon, is marriage mine. Madam Metternich, it is beyond me, sire. Napoleon, you glean, that I have decided to dissolve, pursuant to munitions murmured long, my union with the present empress formed without the church's due authority? Madam Metternich, vaguely. And that light tentatives have winged betwixt your majesty and Russia's court, to moot that one of their grand duchesses should be your empress wife. Not else I know. Napoleon, there have been such approachings. More, worse luck. Last week Champagny wrote to Alexander asking him for his sister, yes or no. Madam Metternich, what worse luck lies in that, your majesty, if severance from the Empress Josephine be fixed unalterably? Napoleon, this worse luck lies there. If your Archduchess, Marie Louise the Fair, would straight accept my hand, I'd offer it, and throw the other over. Faith, the Tsar has shown such backwardness in answering me, time meanwhile trotting, that I have ample ground for such withdrawal. Madam, now, again, will your Archduchess marry me of no? Madam Metternich, your sudden questions quite confound my sense. It is impossible to answer them. Napoleon, well, madam, now I'll put it to you thus. Were you in the Archduchess Marie's place, would you accept my hand and heart therewith? Madam Metternich, I should refuse you most assuredly. 17. Napoleon, laughing roughly, ha ha. That's frank. And devilish cruel too. Well, write to your husband. Ask him what he thinks, and let me know. Madam Metternich, indeed, sire, why should I? There goes the ambassador, Prince Schwarzenberg, successor to my spouse. He's now the groove and proper conduit of diplomacy through whom to broach this matter to his court. Napoleon, do you, then, broach it through him, madam, pray, now, here, tonight. Madam Metternich, I will, informally, to humor you, on this recognizance, that you leave not the business in my hands, but clothe your project in official guise through him tomorrow, so safeguarding me from foolish seeming, as the babbler forth of a fantastic, and unheard of dream. Napoleon, I'll send Eugene to him, as you suggest. Meanwhile prepare him. Make your standpoint this. Children are needful to my dynasty, and if one woman cannot mold them for me, why, then, another must. Exit Napoleon abruptly. Dancing continues. Madam Metternich sits on, musing. Enter Schwarzenberg. Madam Metternich, the Emperor has just left me. We have tapped this theme and that, his Empress and his next. Eh, so, now, guess you anything? Schwarzenberg, of her? No more than, that the stock of Romanov will not supply this Prus commodity. Madam Metternich, and that the would-be customer turns toe to our shop in Vienna. Schwarzenberg, marvelous, and comprehensible but as the dream of Delibird, of which I have lately heard. It will not work. What think you, madam, aunt? Madam Metternich, that it will work, and is as good as wrought. I break it to you thus, at his request. In brief time Prince Eugene will wait on you, and make the formal offer in his name. Schwarzenberg, which I can, but receive ad referendum, and shall initially make clear as much, disclosing not a glimpse of my own mind. Meanwhile you make good Metternich aware? Madam Metternich, I write this midnight, that amaze may pitch to coolness ere your messenger arrives. Schwarzenberg, this radiant revelation flicks a gleam on many circling things, the courtesies which graced his bearing toward our officer amid the tumults of the late campaign, his wish for peace with England, his affront at Alexander's tedious timed reply. Well, it will thrust a thorn in Russia's side, if I err not, whatever else betide. Excellent. The maskers surge into the foreground of the scene, and their motions become more and more fantastic. A strange gloom begins and intensifies, until only the highlights of their grinning figures are visible. These also, with the whole ballroom, gradually darken, and the music softens to silence. Scene 2, Paris. The Tuileries, the evening of the next day. A saloon of the palace, with folding doors communicating with a dining room. The doors are flung open, revealing on the dining table an untouched dinner, Napoleon and Josephine rising from it, and a Bossuet, chamberlain in waiting, pacing up and down. The emperor and empress come forward into the saloon, the latter pale and distressed, and patting her eyes with her handkerchief. The doors are closed behind them. A page brings in coffee. Napoleon signals to him to leave. Josephine goes to pour out the coffee, but Napoleon pushes her aside, and pours it out himself, looking at her in a way which causes her to sink cowering into a chair like a frightened animal. Josephine, I see my doom, my friend, upon your face. Napoleon, you see me bored by Cambaceres ball. Josephine, it means divorce. A thing more terrible than carrying elsewhere the dalliances that formerly were mine. I kicked at that, but now agree, as I for long have done, to any infidelities of act may I be yours in name. Napoleon, my mind must bend to other things than our domestic petting. The empire orbs above our happiness, and 'tis the empire dictates this divorce. I reckon on your courage and calm sense to breast with me the law's formalities, and get it through before the year has flown. Josephine, but are you really going to part from me? Oh no, no, my dear husband, no, in truth, it cannot be my love will serve me so. Napoleon, I mean but mere divorcement, as I said, on simple grounds of sapient sovereignty. Josephine, but nothing have I done save good to you. Since the fond day we wedded into one I never even have thought you jot of harm. Many the happy junctures, when you have said I stood as guardian angel over you, as your dom fortune too, and endless things of such like pretty tenor, yes, you have. Then how can you so gird against me now? You had not pricked upon it much of late, and so I hoped and hoped the ugly specter had been laid dead and still. Napoleon, impatiently, I tell you, dear, the thing's decreed, and even the princess chosen. Josephine, also the princess chosen. I surmise it is none else than the Grand Duchess Anne. Gossip was right though I would not believe. She's young, but no great beauty. Yes, I see her silly, soulless eyes and horrid hair, in which new gauderies you'll forget sad me. Napoleon, upon my soul you are childish, Josephine. A woman of your years to pout it so. I say it's not the Tsar's Grand Duchess Anne. Josephine, some other fair, then. You whose name can nod the flower of all the world's virginity into your bed, will well take care of that. Spitefully. She may not have a child, friend, after all. Napoleon, dryly. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.